Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
First up, we'll take a look at the business stories making this morning's papers and online. Delighted to be joined by Rebecca Harrison. She's the Managing Director of Fishers in Newtown, Mount Kennedy. And I'm also delighted to be joined by Declan Ralph, the Retail Development Director of BWG Foods. That's Spar Mace and XL Brands. Welcome to the programme to you both.
Morning, Bobby.
Firstly, across all the papers this morning, front page of the Irish Times, Donaldson resigns as DUP leader after he's charged with sex offences. It looks like this is going to cause further problems for an already fraught political scenario up there in the north. So that's the headline in all the papers. One of the stories that I wanted to talk about with our business panel is in the second page of the Mail today. Declan Ralph, I don't know about you, but yourself and Rebecca are involved in retail, but calls for confusing Good Friday to be made a bank holiday. And before we discuss this, can I say that for almost 40 years, I worked on Good Friday in retail and I never made a cent, ever.
It's that kind of day, Bobby. Yeah, it's that kind of day. It's very confusing. I mean, the banks are closed. It's probably the only working day that banks close in the year that's not a bank holiday, if you get me. It's Oliver Callan described it well, as he said, it was a sneaky day off for many people. And I think it probably is a sneaky day off. I mean, from a business point of view, on a serious note, I mean, it's probably better that it doesn't become a bank holiday, because then we're into more premium costs, more overheads, more wage costs for smaller business in particular.
I think that's a fair point.
You know, so that's going to be a challenge. Lots of people change what they do. There was no Late Late Show. There was no other radio stations change. No Ian Dempsey yesterday morning couldn't survive the morning without Eno. You know, so
best of season.
Yeah, that sort of thing happens. Yeah. So it's a challenge. And I think better to call it what it is one way or the other, probably in the end.
Yeah. I don't know what your own experience is, Rebecca.
Yeah, I think Good Friday certainly exhibits like a bank holiday anyway. We're open on bank holidays and we're open on Good Friday in our store. But it's we had a good enough day yesterday, so maybe a different experience than yours.
Well, I'm glad somebody had.
Maybe people are heading out of the city and down the country. But it's, I think particularly timely. I know, look, it's being called for because of the weekend that's in it. But again, certainly for me, an increase cost on top of the other increased costs, which we won't get into right now, but it would be a step too far right now. I think that to regulate it, as you say, one way or the other down the line is probably does make sense. And again, I think it's a real divide. There's a lot of divides in the country at the moment, but it's another divide that you have that kind of maybe more corporate, more state banking sectors that have it off. And then your small businesses, it's just another day. So again, it's widening that divide in the economy as to who has it on and who has it off.
Funny, I drove into town yesterday afternoon just at about 2 o'clock, and I couldn't believe how heavy the traffic was.
Yeah.
So then I was saying, maybe is it just me or
no, I felt what,
who are all these people or what are they all doing?
I think
there was tourists
out and about
there
doing something. Yeah, maybe not working though, Bobby. Yeah.
All right, let's have a look at some of the other stories. The presence of cuckoo funds has driven up rents in their own and in nearby blocks. This is a report that's challenging the idea of arrival of the big institutional investors will actually help to moderate costs. It appears the opposite seems to be happening, Declan.
Yeah, it's a long title on the report. It's called The Institutional Investment and Residential Rental Market Dynamics. It was written by Barra McCarthy, who's a senior economist at the Central Bank of Ireland. And it's a study over a long period of time, Bobby, as well.
Yeah.
He looked from 2007 to 2019, and he found that these cuckoo funds, if you like, as they're called, they're able to have a higher level of rent by about 4.1 percentage points is what he saw. But the interesting thing here is that the common sort of thinking around this was that when you had more supply and you had investors investing that the rents would go down.
Yeah.
But actually what's happening is they're going up. And not only are their own rents going up, but the rents within about 100 metres of the, you know, say they have an apartment block or an office block, within 100 metres of that, all of those rents are also lifted by
It's interesting, isn't it?
2.3% is his assessment. So it's a really interesting dynamic that maybe people didn't think was happening. And it's interesting, the report's been around, it was published in February, and it's been around for a little while, and it wasn't really picked up until this weekend, which is also interesting.
Rebecca, just some of the, I think what's out also interestingly sort of portrayed here is the difference in the cost base that an institutional landlord might have versus somebody owning one property.
Yeah, I think
and that the maths are slightly different.
The maths are different. And of course, the big boys get better numbers, and that's always the way. But I think the interesting, just with their size, they can maybe lose a month's rent waiting for a higher rent to come in. Obviously, they've economies of scales in terms of maintenance and upkeep of the properties and that type of thing. So that, yes, that these bigger funds can not only cost them less, but actually they can wait to get the bigger increases and to maybe attract that more premium tenant as well, with being the newer, bigger blocks and things like that.
Well, I think as well that the these institutional investors, most of their properties, I think they're saying that 12,643 units, you know, were bought in the NAMA times. So they certainly didn't pay too much for any of these assets.
No, they've probably got them at the right price.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is, one of the arguments why the rents are higher is that they're offering a better product, standard. Well, they say they are.
Yeah.
I don't know. I suppose you'd have to be in the market to rent from Bobby.
Yeah. And it also translates that 4.1% into, you know, if you take the average rent, it's about a 78 euro increase in monthly rents, which is significant.
Yeah, significant. If you've added, multiply across all the units they have, of course, it amounts to a significant amount of money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We'll stay with housing because Matt Cooper had an interesting piece in today's Mail that loudmouths will keep shutting down the debate on empty nesters. And, you know, there's two articles here. There's another one that gives us good analysis of, you know, individuals who want to downsize and sort of the challenges around it. But we're told, and the report was out during the week, that more than 2/3 of people in the Republic live in homes that are too big for their needs. And that's a kind of a stark headline. It says, it throws up a picture of, you know, all these elderly people maybe wandering around in these big mansions. Yeah. But, you know, for them to transition into something that suits their needs in an area that they want to live is easier said than done.
It is, Bobby. Yeah, it's very, very challenging. And the report actually says that we have the highest rooms per person ratio in Europe. We come in at 2.1 compared to the EU average of 1.6. It's also estimated that more than 88% of people aged over 65 are living in under-occupied housing, mainly among higher income groups, interestingly.
That's 9 out of 10.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, there's the challenges of wanting to live in the area, you know, that you've been in, where you've got all your friends, maybe your family are nearby as well. Things like, you know the local doctor, you know the local pharmacist.
Yeah.
Probably for this age group, you know, the local parish priest. All these type of things would be very, very important. Also the memories, the sentimental attachment to the property, all of those things.
But I think one of the other key things, I don't know what you think about this, Rebecca, but, you know, if you're somebody who's worked really hard all your life, you've paid a mortgage for 30 years, you finally own your own home.
Absolutely.
You don't want to be booted out
of it. No, and you probably also finally have it the way you want it.
Yeah.
You know, you're that little chipping off the block the whole time. And I think that also we need to remember that while a rooms may be not occupied all the time, they may be occupied some of the time, and being that kind of family or community hub, you may need two rooms, even though you're a couple. You know, you might have a person who needs a room downstairs and a person upstairs. There are other things. And also, I mean, the article starts with, you know, we need to free up these bigger houses to allow other people with bigger families to move into them, which is fair enough. But the article starts with adult children are living with their parents. So actually a lot of these rooms, I think, are probably there for their adult children as well. I think it comes back to, I think that the other thing that was interesting in the second article, which was in the Irish Times, which sort of went through a couple of examples of people who are living in maybe houses that are a bit bigger, and all those arguments of wanting to stay in the community, and actually, but some of them were quite happy to move, but couldn't find the alternative.
Yeah.
So that, you know, apartments maybe are one option, but that's not necessarily big enough. The last piece was very much around, you know, I don't know who's going to be living upstairs or downstairs, or they'll be playing loud music. You know, when you're used to living in a detached home, to suddenly go to an apartment is a very big adjustment for people to make. And then obviously the accessibility issue with bungalows on the level living and that type of thing. And that takes up space. It's not as dense. And so there are problems there, and it's finding the right accommodation.
And one of the things, you know, which could be a positive in all this is if you're fortunate enough, you know, to have a fine home with 5 or 6 bedrooms, you get a decent price for it, and you can trouser half the money and then move to somewhere that's more affordable. In other words, it's a good way of seeing out your retirement, provided you could find the right place.
And I think that's it. There is definitely in some parts a willingness to move, but it's being able to is the problem rather than necessarily there. And I think that's it, that this is a discussion piece. The headline being loud mouths will keep shutting down the debate, meaning, oh, the government wants to get the old people all out of their own homes. And obviously that's not helpful for anyone.
Sure.
So I think it's the discussion as to how to make an alternative attractive and supply that.
We move on to an interesting building, the landmark Shelbourne Hotel in Dublin, sold to Archer Hotel Capital, Declan. 5-star hotel, reported price tag of 260 million, big sum, with one source close to the deal saying it went for slightly less than that.
Yeah, it's an iconic building, obviously, here in the city. And
it's also a lot of money, isn't it?
A lot of money, yeah. It was owned by Kennedy Wilson, who are a US-based organisation. And they bought it back in 2014 out of what they call the pre-pack receivership. So it was in sort of NAMA or, you know, the end of Anglo-Irish, somewhere there. And they got a really good deal out of it. They bought the debt effectively, which was probably very, very significant. So it's hard to tell, Bobby, whether they've made money on it or not.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So we do know that it was in 2014... it sold for 152 million. That's the time you're referring to.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also packaged up as a sale with 2 or 3 other assets.
Yeah,
which makes me slightly suspicious.
If you do the numbers on that, there, it looks like they got about 71 million for the other couple of assets with it. So whether they're worth that, it says it's an office building in Washington and a retail asset in the UK. Would they be combined? They'd have to have got only 71 for those together.
Well, I just thought that was curious, the way that it was packaged in with two other assets, which, and I think it is interesting, Rebecca, that we see in Cantillon, that column that I actually love in the Irish Times, they're basically asking the question, can the Shelbourne's owner recoup 260 million? Because they're saying that some eyebrows were raised in Irish hotel circles about the asking price.
Absolutely.
Well, the ability to make money
on
an investment in the hospitality game of 260 million.
Yeah, and they reported the revenues. So they have increased since COVID, if you like, but the revenue is at 57.1 million last year, and which is great, but the expenses have increased by 28% to 37.9 million. So your margin is not huge there, and it's going to take a little while to recoup that cost, certainly, if at all. Look, good news for the staff. It's going to continue. They've said they're continuing.
It's also been sold to hoteliers, which I think is really good news.
Really, really good news. They own the Conrad across the green as well, so they're investing in the Conrad already. So, you know, very positive for the hotel landscape in Dublin, for the employees, possibly for the customers, maybe a little bit of increased prices coming from it. But look, it's Dublin's premium landmark, the old name of the green, and it's great to see it still operating.
I totally agree with you. The fact that it's been bought by hoteliers, people with other assets.
There'll be some synergies probably for them as well. They do operate hotels right across Europe, so they've 13 different hotels, so...
Moving slightly north of the city centre to talk about the airport, and DAA have put up the white flag, as somebody said, and ended their bid for this nearby car park. Maybe give us a little bit of background to this story, Declan.
Well, this is the old Quick Park site that people would know, a little bit away from the airport, but just a very short shuttle bus ride in. And the DAA have been eyeing this up since it came on the market, but they won the tender, if you like, and they won the auction for it. But the CCPC have said that...
Sorry, lads,
you can't have it. Not going to happen. There's 6,200 car parking spaces here that are badly needed. I mean, even this weekend, Bobby, all of the DAA car parks are fully booked and full, effectively.
So turning people away.
That's before we get to the summer. So last summer as well, it was a problem. And there are 23,000 spaces there already. So the 6,200 will be a significant increase on that and would certainly help.
Were the DAA making an argument that if they bought the 6,200...
myself and Rebecca were laughing
about
this
earlier.
That it would
be better for the consumer.
I
had to read this again.
Yeah, they were making that argument. And that's in the context, Bobby, of the 2019 figures are the last ones we have. That they generated €59 million from the 26,000 car parking spaces. So it's a big part of their income. And in the piece, Cantillon also cites their own experience, which was they paid €52 at Quick Park back in 2019, and last week paid €82 for the same sort of amount of time.
58% plus.
58%. So that's good for consumers, all right, yeah. Well done.
So, Rebecca, you were doing the maths there on that whole...
the whole thing. But look, it's great. Look, DA, whether it is quite as altruistic as they say that they have raised the white flag because their consumers in the airport really need the spaces. And if they appeal, it could take a year or more to do it. And so to release it, if you like, for someone else to buy, which is great. And look, good for us. It is absolutely needed. It is shocking. Well, I use the airport when I travel, the parking, and I've noticed in my pocket, but I need it. And so it'd be great to have another player in the market.
The only thing I'd say is because it's such a banker in terms of it being a really solid business, whoever buys it, they're probably going to pay a lot for it. And that might have to be reflected
in the prices.
So there may not be the bargain.
We may end up with a duopoly rather than a monopoly.
So, so we'll have a look at this again, but an interesting story. Rebecca, we'll start with you on this one. Apple and other big tech had a week they would prepare to forget. Just a piece that caught my eye in today's Irish Examiner.
Yeah, so this was an interesting piece. It was really saying how both in the US and in Europe they're being attacked, as they would say, see it. But a few little things coming through. I suppose the love affair with the US government and Apple seems to have worn off. They are really pushing the policies of Apple to block other developers, to block apps being produced, to block apps being used on Apple devices. And so from the US side, and then from the European side, Margarita Vestager, who is sort of the key kingpin behind the 13 billion in tax with Ireland, between Ireland and Apple, that is ongoing. But she's now armed with the new Digital Markets Act that is just published at the end of 2022 to kind of go at Apple again, and also Google and Meta, the three big ones, looking at investigating again about making them more accessible, more fair across the board, and having a more level playing field with some of the smaller boys. The Digital Market Act is about making it the digital market fairer and more contestable. So again, that's something that they have really clamped down on, and so she's using her powers now to get back at them.
Well, we'll see how that goes. But interesting as well, in that same article, the 13 billion that you know, we had here for so long, still is unresolved and rumbling on.
Not resting in our account yet.
No. Rebecca, I know you're very interested in clocks, and you're also from Waterford. So,
absolutely.
A race once again against time, and a reminder to listeners that the clocks spring forward tomorrow morning. This is the Museum of Clocks in Waterford. I visited last year. I did actually a report from there. It's a fantastic place. But Philip Nolan has a really, really nice piece about the whole institution that it is, and it's only a couple of years old. Tell us more.
Yeah, well, I was fascinated reading this. I haven't been, even though I grew up in Waterford, and I will be visiting, definitely. I have a real love for clocks, so delighted to see this here. And I suppose it opened in 2021, a little bit delayed because of COVID. But they have over 600 analogue clocks, and most of the collection has been donated to the museum by the good deeds of three people. So the retired pharmacist David Bowles, retired lawyer Coleman Curran, and his wife Elizabeth Clooney, and they seem to have collected an incredible collection.
Unbelievable. It really is.
It looks stunning, absolutely beautiful. I'm going to use the antiquated term grandfather clock. They are now apparently called long case clocks. But I have a grandfather clock at home, which I got from my uncle, and I absolutely adore it. But I also have a grandmother clock. And so that's why I use the term grandfather, which was given to me by my grandmother before she died. And it's like a mantle clock, but in the same shape.
And do these have to be wound?
Both are mechanical, yeah. And they're fabulous. So I'm delighted to see this, and but it's their task now before 1 a.m. tomorrow morning to change all 600 clocks. Although the fact if they're changing them all, that must mean they must wind them all every day and keep them all going, because a lot of them are mechanical, and I'd say just an incredible job. It's also really it's a very delicate job to do, and so this is not something that anyone can just go in and swirl the hand.
You have to know the personality of the clock.
Exactly. Yeah.
What did you make of it, Declan?
I, in common with Rebecca, I love clocks. Bobby, I have a.
Well, I didn't know our business panel were experts
in clocks.
Horologists.
We're horologists.
A pair of horologists in the studio.
I also have a grandfather clock, which I got from my dad when he passed away.
No way.
Lovely.
It's not lovely.
In pride of place at home. I love clocks. I've actually got 8 clocks, which I believe, in my office. So I've got to go in tomorrow and put all of those forward an hour as well. I get a terrible slagging in BWG for having so many clocks. Tick tock. It means people don't come in to see me, Bobby. It's great. But it's a great place, and I too would love to go and see it, and I heard your report on it, Bobby, and I'd forgotten about it until this.
Yeah, I'm delighted now that I might have stimulated a bit of, and I didn't know I was talking to two experts of note, but maybe the two of you would go down there and visit it, because I'd say
absolutely.
You'd really
yeah.
both
absolutely.
One and all you'd enjoy it more than I would. Finally, Rebecca, a table in the shade, senor, that's going to cost you extra.
I'd pay it. I have to tell you,
we better tell the listeners about the story first.
Tell the story. This is in Spain. They have just introduced a new policy where restaurants are allowed to charge charge a different price for the food, which was interesting, that you order if you have a table in the shade, but they're not allowed to charge extra for a better view, apparently. But look, I think sitting outside is one of the most wonderful things about dining in the summer in whatever country. It's lovely here in Ireland too. But there is certainly, I love to eat in the shade, and I would pay a bit extra, although I would feel that maybe you have a different table charge rather than a premium on the food.
Yeah, and then you move to a seat and the sun is also moving. So, you know, if you're in a place that's in the sun,
at the start of the meal,
then you're in the shade, the price goes up. What did you think of it, Declan?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we all give out all year that we've no sun, you know, all year round here. Oh, it's no sun. Then we go off to the hot places. Oh, it's too hot. So what do? We run into the shade. Now be careful what you wish for, because it's going to cost you more money.
All right. Well, look, thanks for a great review of the papers. Happy Easter to you both.
Happy Easter.
Don't forget to put your multiple clocks forward tomorrow morning. So that's Declan Ralph from BWG Foods, and indeed Rebecca Harrison from Fisher's in Newtown, Mount Kennedy. Thank you, one and all.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.